Drive on Phoenix FM, brought to you in association with St. Francis Hospice, doing more than you think.
He's not just a big voice.
Always forget about that tagline at the end. Mark's in. I'm going to get him talking in a second. First of all, say hello.
Hello.
How are you? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Weather's nice today.
Yeah, it's a lot calmer walking down.
Nothing,
it's calmer.
Untoward happened to
you. No, it's all fine this week. It's all fine. I'm never going to live that down, am I? I'm really not going to live that down ever.
Well, it's up there in the blogs.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
Everyone can hear it.
Yeah, that's it. It's all over now, isn't it?
No, that's a Rolling Stones song. Do you know?
I'm going to go in a minute. I'll be honest. Yeah.
Well, just leave me your notes, aren't you? I can see the state of your hair at the moment. It looks like you're ready to paint the lines down the centre.
I'm ready to go for it. I'm like a bristle brush.
You look like it.
Yeah.
I'm going to play another song from a film.
Okay.
We're going back a few years.
Yes.
The film starred David Bowie.
Uh-huh.
He had a brief, brief part in it.
Yeah.
And it was a film about, see if you can get this from the clue, it was a film about the 1950s in Ladbroke Grove.
Oh,
He sung the theme tune as well.
I don't know.
I'll give you a clue. I absolutely love you, because we're...
No.
Absolute beginners.
Oh, okay.
And this is the Style Council from the same film, Have You Ever Had It Blue? The Style Council, have you ever had it blue?
Well, I've had it a couple of different colours, but I don't think I want to try blue. Just wouldn't suit my eye shade.
From the film Absolute Beginners. It was a great film, that was. Well, I say great film, it was a romp. I didn't really appreciate it back in 86?
86, yeah.
86. I was 20. I was 20.
I won't tell you how old I was.
You weren't born yet.
I was.
Was you?
Yeah, yeah.
You were in nappies.
Just out.
Well, there you go.
There, yes.
You're a fast learner. So let's have a look what films we've got today, darling, in the cinema.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were talking obviously last week and saying that it's award season, so we've had all of these award films. This is kind of the last week of films that are eligible for awards, so to speak. So you kind of have like the last week where they go, right, okay, put it out because then it'll be eligible for awards. So we kind of have one film which we're going to talk about in a minute that when you had the awards buzz very early on, this was one of the first films. So much like when we were talking about last week with Boy Erased, where it was like, back in November or something, there was loads of awards buzz.
Yeah.
The same for this one as well, what we're going to talk about in a minute. But let's start with a comedy, one that has got no awards buzz at all, but it's just, it's out there. And
could do with a good laugh.
Yeah, we haven't had a comedy for a while, I don't think. So this is Instant Family. It's about married couple Pete and Ellie who decide to adopt. Problems occur when it turns out that rather than adopting one child, they have to adopt three siblings. It stars Mark Wahlberg, and when you think about it, Mark Wahlberg has been doing family comedies for quite a few years now, actually, sort of naturally moved over to comedies. So gone are the Marky Mark days of him strutting around in his underwear, that's gone.
What, like in porn films?
Well, no, I mean, you don't remember Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch?
I remember Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, I mean,
he was in, wasn't he in NSYNC?
No. No, you're thinking of his brother.
Oh, Danny.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he was a solo singer, and then obviously he went off to make some action films and whatever else. And now he's doing these family films, basically. The problem is that 99% of these family comedy films that he's making are truly terrible. I think that's part of the problem, is that they're always unfunny, and it's always about making him look the best.
Yeah.
Never mind about who's starring in it. It's always about, right, how can we make him look the best in this? And it just doesn't work. You have to have that comedy spread over all of it, really. So Wahlberg sits front and center in this film, really, it's kind of his thing. The story has so much more to offer, but doesn't really allow it, because obviously it's all about Mark Wahlberg. Wahlberg, really. I mean, Pete and Ellie's life are turned upside down when they adopt these three siblings. I mean, in reality, their lives are pretty easy, to be honest with you. You know, they're not struggling with anything. It is one of those things where, you know, they have the money, they're happy to flaunt it. They have one giant house, and then they have, or they also have a second house, which they're doing up as well. So, you know, it's not as though they're really struggling in life. This thread of storyline really smacks of being completely out of touch with modern audiences, I have to say. You know, it comes across as very misguided, and the jokes in it don't really work either. It's quite unfunny a lot of the time, and there is the small jokes that do come about are from the small scattering of secondary characters,
right.
You know, they're all having a little joke and whatever else. It's all of the jokes that Wahlberg and Rose Byrne, who plays his wife Ellie, have are really unfunny. I mean, badly unfunny.
So are they trying to make it a bit like a modern day Parenthood?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, Parenthood had so many different strands going on, and that blended beautifully. If nobody's seen Parenthood, the original one with Steve Martin, it's hugely entertaining, and the TV show was brilliant as well. It kind of is like that because it tries to do the family side of things.
Right.
I will say that the film's portrayal of adoption, I think, is probably its winning hand. It's very sensitive, and it shows all of the tough hoops that parents have to jump through in order to adopt, and it feels very much like real life compared to, you know, the sort of Hollywood dressing it up in their usual Hollywood style. I mean, it does gloss over a few essential parts of it all, really. It's sort of that they turn up and there's a couple of bits and whatever else, and then all of a sudden the next thing is, oh, they've adopted three people. You know, I mean, you're kind of like, okay, there's some more steps here, and they do sort of briefly reference them, but it doesn't really happen. Also, this is what I'm saying about the film, is that this is its winning hand, is that it shows the importance of adoption,
right.
Not just for children, but also for teenagers, because one of the kids here is a teenager, and I think it does a very good job in saying, look, teenagers have got to be adopted as well. In actual fact, you'll get some good stuff out of teenagers as well.
But hang on, didn't Despicable Me cover adoption?
It did.
And they did it very well.
No, that's true, they did do it very well, but it's an animated movie, so you know, you're not that
you can still get the point across with an animated
movie. You can, it just, with this, they're really making it front and centre of saying, you know, this is family adoption. So
right.
I think the film, if it had been a family drama about adoption, it would have worked so well. It would have been really sensitive. It would have worked really entertaining. But
so the comedy sucks, really?
The comedy is quite bad, I will say that. Yes, it feels like they wanted to make it a comedy of errors, so to speak, and it doesn't really work. It comes off as probably one of the biggest missed opportunities in the last 12 months in terms of comedy, and I think that's the problem with it.
Because
you want to see, you know, sensitive portrayals of topics like adoption, and as I said, it does do it, but they try to blend it with comedy, and unfortunately, it doesn't work.
Oh dear.
Yes.
Do you know what? I'm going to play a game a little bit later on when I re-edit this and put it back up. I'm going to play a game. Every time you say adoption, I'm going to have a drop of drink. I'm going to pour myself a scotch, and every time you say adoption, I'm going to not drop a scotch back.
You might even not get to the end of the editing. That's the thing.
No, once I've edited it. In fact, maybe I'll just say, hi, my name's Ian Lee. This is Mark Sibby. Adopt. Anyway, what's next?
A Private War, which is the film that we were talking about very early on, sort of November time. It was getting kind of awards buzz. It was saying, you know, this could be one of those films that's up there for Best Picture or Best Female Performance by Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
It's the true story of war correspondent Marie Colvin.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody knows her. It's about her drive to report on the front line of conflicts around the globe and give voices to the voiceless. There was a very good documentary about her on BBC Four earlier this week.
I think I saw it.
Which I really enjoyed. I thought it was fantastic. The thing is, how do you sum up a life as fearless as Marie Colvin in a feature film? That's what it's trying to do her. Because, you know, her work was extraordinary.
Yep.
And pushed boundaries. And she constantly put herself in danger to report on everything, basically.
Most war correspondents do, but she went the extra mile.
She did, yes, absolutely. And this is what Rosamund Pike is left to try and capture, you know, try and find out who Colvin was on the front line. And, you know, Rosamund Pike is a great actress. I love her. I'll happily watch her in absolutely anything. And she is terrific in this film. She's absolutely terrific. And I think it is one of her best performances. It's just a shame that the film lets her down and the story, the narrative, so that it throws different timelines all over the place into the film. So you're never really sure where you are at certain times.
So it's constant flashback and then a flashback from a flashback.
Yeah, kind of. And you're thinking, okay, where am I in terms of her life? And, you know, it gets quite messy. And at times there's one too many storylines. Okay. And then some of the other storylines, which I really enjoyed, they leave for like 5 minutes and then they're off to something else, which is disappointment. Oh. The other thing that they try and do is they try and show her home life as well quite a lot. And they basically say that...
Did she have much of a home life? She was a hard drinker and a hard smoker, apparently.
Well, yeah, she was. I mean, it shows that in the film. And really, what comes across is the fact that she was a miserable person at home. She was only happy when she was on the front line.
Yeah. I'm a miserable person at home and I'm only happy when I'm on the radio.
Well, there you go, you see.
And I'm a kindred spirit.
There you go. So you see, it's people like that who only are happy when they're pushing boundaries or, you know, at the front line and whatever else. The one thing that this film does really badly, and it really left a sour taste in my mouth, was that Colvin is naked a lot of times in this film.
Naked?
Naked, yes.
Are tickets available for tonight?
The thing is, you know, yes, she's a very strong-willed woman.
Rosamund Pike's naked?
Rosamund Pike is naked in it, yes. Yes, she's a strong-willed woman. She's happy to answer the door naked to anybody. It doesn't matter.
A private war.
A private war, yes.
Yeah. I'm just looking up the View Cinema. Yeah, go on.
And you think, okay, yeah, clearly she doesn't care about who she's naked in front of. Fantastic, this is great. But it feels like the film is doing it too many times. It feels like it's going, right, okay, we've seen her naked once. Let's do it again. And let's do it again. You know, I don't think we need you to take your clothes off now.
I don't mind being naked in the studio.
Yeah, but I mean, that was part of the narrative in this story. I don't think this is...
I can do my show in my boxers. I'm still good.
I'm off that week. it really left a sour taste in my mouth because you kind of think, okay, I think they're taking this too far, to be honest with you. But there's a really intense scene in this where she is trying to cross the border. And she very cleverly captures the border guards out in a very fun way, actually. It's very clever. Yep. And I kind of wanted to see more of that, the way that she, you know, twisted certain things and got what she wanted. And it doesn't really happen in this film. This is, you know, instead of finding who she was, you sort of don't really find that much about her. As I said, Rosamund Pike is great in this. I think she's absolutely fantastic. I just feel that the film has let her down in terms of finding out who Colvin really is.
That is a shame. See, Rosamund Pike, if I'm not mistaken, isn't she the new voice of Lady Penelope in the Thunderbird cartoons?
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just, you see, it's in my head, that's Lady Penelope on the screen with no clothes on, not Rosamund Pike playing the part that she's playing.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. You're just going to have to separate the voice from the person, I guess. And I know it's going to be difficult
for you. I'm so shallow.
But, you know, as I said, it's a shame. The BBC 4 documentary was very good.
Right.
The film... It doesn't feel like it scratches even a tiny bit of the surface as to who Marie Colvin was.
Is it an independent film?
No, it's a studio production. Oh, wow. And you can see why they've gone for it, because it is very topical. And, you know, I mean, Marie Colvin died several years ago. But it's just a shame that it's all a little bit let down.
That is a shame. So what's the certificate on that one?
So that is, I believe it's 15, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, she's not that naked then.
Well, she is. I think it's more to do with the swearing.
Okay. And what about the first film?
Instant Family.
Instant Family.
What? Instant Family is a PG.
PG. Oh, and what else you got for us? One more from the scenario? Is that it?
No, that's it. We're now scaling down because, you know, awards season is over. So now we're back to basically two films at the cinema.
Oh, lovely. So you watched the BAFTAs?
I did watch the BAFTAs, yes.
What did you think?
You know, I think it was all very safe. The winners were pretty obvious, apart from Christian Bale not winning for Best Actor. Rami Malek winning. I was quite shocked at that. But, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, we talked about that last week and whatever else. In terms of it as a spectacle, Joanna Lumley was kind of let down with a lot of the lines and the humour that she was given.
Do you know what upset me? You've got all these great comedy writers out there, and she could have had some really good lines to come out with. Then Melissa McCarthy gets up, and everybody's giggling.
Yeah.
She said two words, and they're all laughing. I'm thinking, poor old Jonah Lumley.
Yeah.
She did... Whatever came out of her mouth flopped.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You need somebody who's able to do that sort of dialogue, that sort of humour very, very well. Because remember, you're in a room full of a lot of stuffy people who are just there waiting for an award. You've got to keep them upbeat and humorous.
The thing is, they're not all plum-in-your-mouth people like Joanna Lumley, bless her, and Stephen Fry was. But Stephen Fry can go guddly-wuddly and everybody laughs.
Yes.
Whereas Joanna Lumley... just seem to be laughing at her own jokes.
I'm always surprised that they don't get somebody who is more in tune with...
I'd go and do it. I'd even go and do the Oscars if they asked me.
It's a long way to fly, isn't it?
I won't be flapping my arms, mate. I'll be on a plane.
I always find that with the BAFTAs and with the Oscars and whatever else, you need somebody who is in tune with the whole spectrum, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we've seen a good host since... Ricky Gervais, yep. When he did the Golden Globes. But also, I loved when Amy Poehler and Tina Fey did the Golden Globes as well.
Oh, yeah. They were very good.
This is the thing. But they're comedians as well. They're comedic actors. And I think that's what you need. Now, people are going to say, Joanna Lumley's a comedic actress.
She's not.
As well.
She's in a comedy.
Yes.
But she's not a comedic actor. Because if you look at the list of stuff that she's done... It's all dramas and there's not much comedy. Even the new Avengers wasn't a comedy. It was hilarious, but it wasn't a comedy.
Yeah, I would argue that her Patsy in Absolutely Fabulous is the straight person.
Yeah.
She's the straight person.
Totally.
As much as I like Joanna Lumley, I would like to see somebody fresher, somebody younger.
Yep.
Why can't you just have several presenters? This is what I don't get as well.
I don't.
Just give it to several presenters.
I also felt sorry for, what's his face? My mind's gone totally blank. Alan Partridge.
Steve Coogan.
I felt sorry for Steve Coogan because the camera went on him a lot.
Yeah.
And he won absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
They didn't, they sort of acknowledged Stan and Ollie, and that was it. He didn't even get a sniff.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. And I'm upset for Richard E. Grant as well. Because I think he should have got Best Supporting.
Well, we're going to talk about that film.
Are we?
Yeah. Can You Ever Forgive Me? Oh, no, it's already been out. Sorry, I'm going completely crazy. He is fantastic in that film. Absolutely fantastic. When I saw that film, I really liked it. But the standout is Richard E. Grant.
Yeah.
That film would be so much worse off if he wasn't in it.
Which is a shame, and it wasn't acknowledged. But anyway, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll play another song in just a moment, and then we'll have a look at the DVD releases. How about that?
That sounds good to me.
Awesome. Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
So, thank you very much. Mark is still here with me. What have you got for me on DVD?
We've got Versus, which is a film set in Southend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you know what? I was thinking to myself, how many films do we know that have been filmed or set in Essex? Not that many.
No, there's that one that was the documentary about Dr. Feelgood.
Yes.
But that was a documentary.
And don't forget, 2 years ago, Tom Cruise was here in the summer.
Oh, yes.
Filming Mission Impossible, and the scenes did not make it into the film. But here's the thing. They're in the trailer. The scenes are in the trailer, but they're not in the film, and they're also not on the deleted scenes.
Oh. What about the film with Michael Caine?
Harry Brown.
Harry Brown.
Harry Brown.
That was filmed at... Chapel Heath, round Moby Dick. Opposite the Moby Dick pub, there's flats.
Yes.
And those were the flats they shot the exterior of.
Okay.
And that was the underpass they shot in. So, yes.
I did kind of think that maybe they did shoot that round there, but there we go. But, yeah, not that many films.
Not that many films set in the seaside. There's a new one out apparently coming out about Margate, I've heard.
Okay.
Have to look into that, won't you?
Yes.
It's all about a young girl that has a really rubbish family life, and she discovers stand-up comedy set in and around Margate.
Oh. Interesting.
I can't remember what it's called.
Come on, you knew about this and now you've forgotten what it's called.
I'm lousy with names.
Oh, dear. Trevor. Honestly. But yeah, I was kind of thinking, you know, what films do we have that's set around Essex? It's kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah, Essex Boys, that was set around Essex.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of the gangster stuff.
Yeah.
But, they're ten a penny, aren't they? That's the thing. And that's why, you know, it's so difficult to decipher which is a good one, which isn't, because they're about every week. You know, you go down to the local supermarket and there's another one on the shelves. It's the same sort of cover. Yep. And you know it's going to be the same sort of...
Oh, yes. Rehash.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing really stands out, which is a bit of a shame, because you know that there's probably some good stuff in there.
Yep.
But it's just lumped in with everything else. So, yeah, there's a lot of Essex gangster films. Oh, Fish Tank.
Yes.
Fish Tank was a great film, which was about a young girl who coming of age tale as well. And also, let's not forget that Batman Begins was filmed just across the water, actually.
Really?
Yes. Some of Batman Begins was filmed at...
Canby?
No.
That's across the water.
At the docks.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You just don't know, do you? Until you're sitting there and you go, isn't that... I know where that place is. And do you know what I know it is? We'll talk about it after the news.
This is Phoenix FM.
Drive on Phoenix FM. Brought to you in association with St. Francis Hospice. Doing more than you think.
Ian Lee. Not just a big voice.
I am a big voice. And so is Mark. He's quite a slight chap, you know, but he's got a very deep, big voice. He's a bigger voice than he is in his frame.
I'll take that. That's fine. That's not a problem. Yeah, thank you very much.
If I was listening to that, I think there's two sexy hunks on that radio station right now. When in effect, there's one chunk and a wimp.
I was about to say they must be listening to a different station then.
Oh, dear. I don't know why I called you a chunk. I really don't. Anyway, what have we got in the world of DVD?
So, obviously, we were talking just before the break about films set in around Essex. So, Versus is set in Southend. It's a story of young rapper Adam, who's sent to live in Southend, where he discovers rap battles are a key part of the underground scene. However, family matters return to haunt him. I think it's possibly a fair thing to say that from the outside, people would say, well, this is 8 Mile set in Southend. You know, I mean, yes, that's a vague description of it. That's fine. And it does take its lead from Eminem's, you know, incredible film, 8 Mile as well. But a rap battle set in a disused club in Southend is a world away from a rap battle set on the streets of Detroit.
What's the disused club? Do we know?
No, we don't, actually. Initially, I thought it was the Palace Theatre, but it's not because of the way that the incline goes. It's not.
That's the slopiest stage in Essex.
It is, yes.
No, it's the slopiest stage in the country.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I don't know, but there's a lot of scenes shot down on the seafront, right, as well. There's a lot on the seafront as well, I will say that. The rap battles in this actually get quite aggressive and quite angry at times and spill over into some fighting in a car park and out on the streets as well. But what the film is trying to say about this aggression is the fact that all of these teenagers and these 20-somethings, basically who have nowhere to go in Southend, are actually channeling that energy and that anger into these rap battles. And, you know, for me, I found it quite a positive message, actually, because normally we get films where, you know, teenagers or 20-somethings are always kind of labelled as, you know, miserable or layabouts or, you know, students, and they're not doing anything. Actually, Versus is quite a positive role model for teenagers and for 20-somethings who are sort of struggling through life and trying to find their way.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it is. I think that's the thing. You know, it's a positive piece of work. You know,
I found that film.
Ah.
It's called Jellyfish.
Jellyfish, there we go.
It's one to look out. You have to look out for that now.
We're going to have to find out. Jellyfish set in Margate. Lovely. Versus is in Southend on the seafront as well. No jellyfish in it, though, I have to say. But they do walk past the Sea Life Centre, I've got to say that. It's kind of nice to see certain things where you're like, yeah, oh, I've had fish and chips in there.
Do you actually, when you watch these films, do you actually scrutinise every inch of that screen that you've got in front of your face. So I recognise that, I recognise that. Or does it actually just hit you?
With Versus, it was very difficult for me to sort of break away and just go, this is a film, when considering how many times I go to Southend, you know, and go on the pier and, you know, play on the arcade machines, you're like, I was only there a few weeks ago. And you're like, I wonder when they shot this. And, you know, where were they filming at this time? So, yeah, it was kind of fun to see it, but it was also difficult to fully immerse myself in the film. But the reason also is because Adam, who's the central character, is very tough to warm to. He doesn't make it easy for the viewer or his friends to become close with him.
Yeah.
And yet that's to do with, over time, you start to understand why he's like he is, why he's so closed off as well. And the film, I think, for that sort of angle, isn't as hard-hitting as it should be. You really want to know why he's like he is.
Yeah.
And it sort of dabbles a little bit, but it's not a lot. And, you know, you want the bigger picture, basically. I mean, this is the downfall of the film, really. Adam is almost refusing, figuratively, to be picked up by his new friends. Instead, he's sort of keeping an arm's distance away from all of them. And I think, as a viewer, you want to know that there is hope behind those eyes. You want to know that there is redemption coming up at some point, and it never really feels like that's going to happen at any point. And I think that's more to do with the script,
right,
than the actual actor who's playing Adam. I think it needed a lighter touch in terms of that character. You know, he doesn't need to be that hard-nosed all the way through the film. We want to see some lighter sides of it as well. So I think somewhere in Versus is a very good coming-of-age tale. I just think it gets a little bit too lost in the over-the-top aggressive rap battles,
right,
and also the standoff central character. So, you know, I think it's a good film. I just don't think it's a great film.
Okay, cool. I've just had Gary. He sent me a message. He said, I don't think he realised that we do a film review every Friday. He thought I'm playing out last week's. He's got cloth ears. He really has. And what's the last film you got for us then?
A Star Is Born. Yes.
It's on DVD already?
It's on DVD.
That's quick.
Blu-ray, yes.
Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson, a lovely film.
Oh, well, I mean, that's taken some time to get to DVD, I've got to say. No, this is the fourth version of the story and the third remake of the 1937 film. So,
of course, if there's four of the story, and yes, this will be the third remake. The first being What's Her Face and James Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Judy Garland and James Mason. The second being Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson. And the third being this one with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
Yes. Yes.
There you go.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I think this is the best version.
I haven't seen the last two versions.
You haven't seen the Barbara Streisand version?
It came out in 76. I was 10. What does a 10-year-old want with watching that film?
I know, but it's on TV quite a bit.
I've seen half of it.
You sort of know. For me, I really enjoyed that one. I liked it. I like the Judy Garland version as well. I think this is the best version. I really do. I think it is. The reason I think it's the best one is because it's updated more for a modern audience.
Okay.
You know, a sort of a pop celebrity audience. Yet it still retains that classic movie feel to it as well. And that's down to two things. One of them is the way that it's directed, because it's directed by Bradley Cooper as well.
Is it his debut as a director?
It is, yes. He always wanted to do it, and it took him years to get it off the ground. And the way that he shot it is like a rock concert.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're there. You feel like you're right in it, like the energy, and it's just pouring off the screen, the sound as well. It's amazing. And that is really impressive in this film. I mean, he plays Jackson Maine, who's the guy who discovers the young singer who then goes on to fame and fortune. And Jackson Maine is still struggling with alcoholism.
Yep.
And, you know, he's basically in a downward spiral as well. And, you know, the thing about Jackson Maine is that really, in a film like this, most other Hollywood films, or most other films, would shy away from showing his downward spiral so raw. It's such a raw performance here, because we see the true effects of alcoholism.
Right.
We see the true effects of drug addiction. We see the true effects of basically everything. And that's to the film's credit, because it doesn't shy away from absolutely anything in this film. And I'm really impressed with it. However, what is the big standout in this film is Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga, because look, we know she's an international singing sensation. She's amazing, and she's had a few starring roles in a few bits here and there. She's been
Simpsons,
okay.
Simpsons for one.
Simpsons. She was also in the Robert Rodriguez Planet Terror film that he made as well.
American Horror Story.
Yes, she was in that. She was very good in that. But here she's amazing because this is her life.
This is her raw and with the natural hair colour.
Yes, this is her life. You can feel that this is not Lady Gaga. This is the story of Stefanie Germanotta, which is her real name. So everything about Ale in this film is clearly ripped from her life, like right down to the moments where she's talking about her nose or the fact that, you know, her hair's not the right colour. And you're thinking, somebody somewhere along the line has told Lady Gaga this before she became famous, and now they've worked it into the script.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I think it is a brilliant performance. I mean, the first moment where she gets up and sings is just, you know, jaw on the floor, heart-stopping moment. I mean, we know she can sing anyway, but it is a beautiful moment. It's
You get engrossed in the character.
This is the thing. It's very easy to get engrossed in her, and, you know, the film belongs to her. It absolutely belongs to her, and I'm going to be really, really annoyed if Shallow doesn't win Best Original Song at the Oscars, because it is a brilliant piece of work. I mean, it's a tearjerker.
Then it would have been two for two, because Evergreen won the Oscar, didn't it?
Yes.
So, and Barbara Streisand wrote that.
Yes.
In association.
See, it's all circular. It's all coming back around again. So
she wrote that with Paul Williams.
Paul Williams from Phantom of the Paradise.
That's it.
There we go, you see. I know these things.
I've got that on DVD.
I love that film. But yes, so going back to A Star Is Born, I can't say enough great things about this. As I said, I think it is the best version out there, and yep. I like the other versions as well. It's not won the awards that I wanted to win so far, but we've got the Oscars coming up. It's fine. It's not a problem. I just think it is a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. It's a Hollywood film. Let's not forget that, but it doesn't feel like a Hollywood film. It feels like a down and dirty type film as well, right. that lays bare everything. So
when I see clips of it, it reminds me of Bette Midler's The Rose.
Oh, yes.
Because there's a lot of live stuff in that, and
yes,
shooting on a big stage. And
yes.
That sort of reminds me of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of personal moments in this film as well, a lot of intimate moments. I mean, there's a wonderful scene where Jackson Maine is trying to recover, and he's writing all of these songs, and then obviously Ali comes in and helps him. They're just sat at a piano, just working out a song. You know, it's just these intimate moments that really makes the film everything. You know, it takes it from this big spectacles, as we said, you know, rock concerts and whatever else, and it takes it down to just these two people who are in love and are trying to write a love letter. I can't say enough great things about it. I just see it, go and see it.
Okay, it's still in the cinema though, isn't it?
It's playing in cinemas as well,
and it's coming out on DVD.
And it's out on DVD Blu-ray.
Okay, that's the other thing that confuses me. Sky bring out a film.
Yes.
And they put it out on Sky the same night it's in the cinema.
Yes.
I've got to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Most people's TVs now are 55 inches and more.
Yeah.
You can... And most people have either got a soundbar or a home cinema sound system.
Yes.
Why would you want to pay 15, 20 quid plus whatever your popcorn is when you go to the cinema, when you can stay at home and watch it on Sky... for free, if you're a Sky customer, on your nice big television with your nice big sound system with a pound bag of popcorn.
It's a very valid point, actually, and this is happening more and more, where we're getting films that are in the cinema and on demand at the same time. I mean, Curzon Home Film do it as well, and, you know, Sky do it as well.
Roma on Netflix for a start.
Well, Netflix has slightly changed their release schedule, so they will release one of these big films in the cinema 2 weeks before it goes to Netflix, because, you know, they're doing that. But only with big films. They're not doing it with all films. I mean, it's an interesting distribution idea. I don't know how it works.
Shouldn't it make the cinema stop and think, hey, well, we want bums on seats, and the experience of a film, I personally think, is better in the cinema.
Yes.
And I know you can have the best sound system in the world, you can have the best home cinema system in the world, but I like going to the cinema. But I refuse to pay £15 to sit in a seat that I can sit in on Monday for £4.99, right? And pay nearly £30. If there's two of you, it's like £30 for popcorn and drinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's silly.
Yeah. It's very difficult now. I mean, cinemas are not helping themselves with their pricing.
No.
I think that's the thing.
No.
It's you know, you go to the cinema and you think, yeah, I really want to see that. And then you pay that sort of money and you come away and you're disappointed.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. Hopefully, that's where I come in.
Yes.
And do my job and maybe give some recommendations as to what to actually go and see and what is well worth your money to go and see.
Well, you're doing a great job. I'm loving having you here on a Friday.
It's very kind of you.
It's wonderful. Thank you very much for coming in. Have a, what are you doing the weekend? Anything good?
It's my nephew's second birthday tomorrow.
How old is he?
There's two of them. They're twins.
Oh, so they're four then.
I'm going to use that joke tomorrow. I really am.
You can have that one for free. Do we know what you're going to review next week?
So next week, so obviously we're outside of the award stuff and everything else like that. So next week we're going to be talking about Cold Pursuit, the new Liam Neeson film.
Oh.
And we're also going to be talking about a British film called Old Boys. Could be about me and you.
Could be, but I'm not that old. Look forward to it. You have a great weekend. You take care. I'm going to play us out with Iggy Pop, Lust for Life from...
Trainspotting.
Big thank you to Mark for wonderful film reviews. We'll be back next week with two from the cinema and two from DVD.